call the March 5th meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to order. And I will open a public hearing on HJM 9. And colleagues, HJM 9, as you all know, is the memorial that we began hearings on last week, dealing with the Iraq War. We have, thanks to our capable committee assistant, you should have in front of you a hand-engrossed copy of the memorial with the amendments that Representative Boquist brought in last week. We actually had a lot of testimony last week. It was very emotional and extremely intense, and I know quite hard for a number of people, including committee members. And we will be continuing today. We have a number of people who signed up last week that we didn't get to, so we're going to start with those folks who are back here today and then take people who are signed up newly today. And so we'll start, and I'll call people in panels of three, starting with Jean Raymond, Yvonne Simmons, and Olivia Watt. If the three of you could please come forward.
I'm Jean Raymond from Corvallis, Oregon, and I want to thank you for allowing us to speak on this very important issue. I'm urging you to pass, I think all of you have copies from last Monday of my testimony, because I brought them in at that time. Oh, she's asking about me. I'm urging you to pass the House Joint Memorial 9, the Homeward Bound Act of 2007. As you may know, the City of Corvallis and Benton County have already passed resolutions to bring the troops home from Iraq. As a member of the Corvallis Alternatives to War, I support the memorial as an important step to petition our government to bring our troops home. Corvallis Alternatives to War is made up of parents, students, veterans, workers, business owners, professors, and professionals who work for peace and to end the war in Iraq. And I don't know if you know, but we've been vigiling in front of our Benton County Courthouse since 2001 when the Afghanistan war started, and that's every day. And unfortunately, we will continue until the war stops, and we hope it soon. The Federal Bipartisan Iraq Study Group has been ignored. We want to let those in the Capitol know that we disagree about the effectiveness of an escalation in the war. Besides the economic costs of the Iraq War to our nation and to Oregon, we deplore the deaths of the U.S. soldiers and the Iraqis. The war has led to deaths, torture, illegal imprisonment, spying on citizens, loss of security, and loss of regard from other nations, including former allies. I just found a figure yesterday on the web. Terrorism has increased 700% since the war in Iraq. We are no longer a beacon of democracy because of the Iraq war, and now threats to Iran. Diplomacy must be reinvigorated in the White House. The warmongering language and the threats only make peace less possible. An escalation or surge seems far from what is necessary. Arming Iraqis with even more weapons is counterproductive. We the people ask for timetables for disengagement, fairness for Iraqis over their own resources and government, restitution for the damage to Iraq that the U.S. has perpetrated, and a sensible plan of diplomacy toward peace for the Middle East. The House Joint Memorial 9 is a step in the right direction. And the amendments, it says in line 14, I would keep prohibits rather than inserting limits. And we believe that we should have immediate withdrawal.
Excuse me, Olivia, what page were you on when you...
This is the
she's not Olivia. She's
amendment.
Not Olivia.
I'm Jean Raymond. This is line 14. Mm-hmm. It says in line 17, delete prohibits and insert limits. And we'd like to keep that. It seems important.
Madam Chair, that's on page 2 of the amendment.
Right. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions of this witness? Okay. Please go ahead.
My name is Yvonne Simmons. I'm from several peace groups, one Women in Black and Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, which is 91 years old. And women from all over the world met at The Hague in 1915 to try to stop the First World War. And we had one woman from Oregon that went, who was the principal of Kensington School, and she was the only woman to go to The Hague in 1915, west of the Mississippi. So we have a history, a personal history with this very, the oldest peace group, women's peace group. And I'd like to thank Chair Rosenbaum and the members to listen to our testimonies. And I urge you to support this bill to bring the troops home from Iraq. End the unnecessary death, maiming, and destruction of our soldiers' lives. It has been proven that the reasons given to invade Iraq were all proven wrong. Yet still, some of the public believe that Iraq was involved in 9/11, which I find amazing. Look what untruthful propaganda has done. It's destroyed a nation, Iraq. It's people and infrastructure. I was born in England, London, after the Second World War. And because of the First World War, I never knew my grandfather, and my mother never knew her father. She was 6 months old. I never knew my father because of the Second World War. And think of how many children are growing up without a mother or a father because of this war, and how many parents are growing up without their son or without their daughter because of this war, which to me is an illegal war. The troops need to return home and be with their loved ones, and for some, put their broken lives back together if they can. And I'd like to say something about Thelma, the woman who spoke last, about her daughter that came back 2.5 years ago with a 6-inch folder of all the doors she's been knocking on to try to get help in 2.5 years for her 60% injured daughter, and hasn't got any help as yet. And it's devastating their family, the whole family, not just the woman soldier who came back, but also her mother and father and her siblings. And you think of soldiers that come back that don't even have that support of their parents or of loved ones. How are they doing? And I think if this country is to support the troops, they have to support the troops when they come home, and their needs are met, because it's just too devastating. The United States of America is the first military power in the world, but as we can see, bombs and guns do not win the hearts and minds of people. It causes death, destruction, and chaos and lawlessness. Will this government lead us into another war, like with Iran, at the expense of our young people? Life is precious. Being healthy in mind and body is precious. Let us teach our children to love this world and the people on it. Killing breeds hatred and revenge. And please bring the troops home now, or help that happen. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, please go ahead.
My name is Olivia Watt. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I represent the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. As Yvonne said, we're the oldest women's peace organization in the country. I would like to say something about myself. During World War II, I married a West Point graduate who was a bomber pilot, and we served on many Air Force bases throughout the country. So during the 50s, he resigned his commission because he didn't feel comfortable about the Korean War. And by the Vietnam War, our whole family was marching in the peace marches against that war. So I have experienced war and peace from all sides. Anyway, I want to thank you for introducing House Joint Memorial 9 to bring our troops home and stop the escalation. I want to speak specifically today just a couple of the amendments. The invasion of Iraq was not so much of a war as an invasion, and now it's an occupation. I object to changing the word from occupation to military activities. The fact is we do occupy Iraq. We control the borders and shoot Iranians who cross. We have built many military bases in Iraq, seemingly permanent ones. In Baghdad, we now have the biggest embassy in the world. We used to spend $3.5 million for this embassy just a few years ago. Now the request is for a budget of $1.3 billion. This embassy complex covers 104 acres, which makes it over three times as big as the Pentagon. It's going to include a 15-foot high fence in the new green zone. It will include its own water treatment plant, its own power plant. It also includes a gym, a swimming pool, a food court, a movie theater, and a, quote, American club. If our present government were not planning to stay in Iraq, why would we be building the biggest and most luxurious embassy in the world at this time when our people are saying, and our generals are saying, our Iraqi vets are saying, bring our troops home? I don't intend to be rude, but given the facts, changing the wording from occupation to military activities seems to me to be weaseling at a time when we need to be forthright and firm. When we say our troops should be withdrawn now, we're really not crazy. We know it takes time to execute the order, but we have to set a firm and recent date for the people who started this war, or they will continue and expand as they are doing now in Iraq and throughout the Middle East for as long as they can. They are now trying to work us up to a war with Iran. If we allow our government the loophole of, quote, advisory assistance, unquote, it will allow them, as the government did in Vietnam, to keep our military people on the ground, like boots on the ground. Please do not accept this amendment, which will give the warmongers another loophole to weasel out of what we want them to do. If we're going to all the trouble to make this state heard in the nation as a courageous leader who has the courage to say we must bring our troops home now, then let's do it right. I thank you all for your support of H.J. Memorial number 9 to bring our troops home, and I hope that we can conclude this memorial with firm words which are not in any way controversial, so that they could be misread, which would weaken the amendment. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much for being here. And next we'll call Janet Brown and Ben Fang Jr. I'm also going to read the names of other people that had signed up last week, just in case any of them are here, and that would be Lorna Simpson, Betsy Toll, Sarah Rich, Susan Sutherland Martin, John Pearson, John Roy Wilson, and Reverend Mark Knudsen. Are any of those folks here? Okay. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you, Representative Rosenbaum, and the whole committee for hearing this testimony. My name is Janet Brown, and I'm a retired school teacher from the Woodburn School District. I taught in the middle school, Valor Middle School, and I am a member of Fellowship of Reconciliation, which, like the organization that was presented before me. The Fellowship of Reconciliation is an interfaith peace organization that also began in 1914 with an effort to not let us come to a war. So, let's see. In my teaching, I worked with young people in the middle school who, and some were gang involved, and, you know, with different tensions going on. I worked with the peer mediator trainings. I took the nonviolence pledge that was developed here in Salem by Ann and Bob Kelly and coordinated that effort for 5 years in the Woodburn Public Schools. I have been a member of peace education on in the Fellowship of Reconciliation, doing trainings in Oregon and in Washington State for the last 7 years. So my heart is definitely involved in the education of alternative ways to solve conflict. I am the mother of a 30-year-old son and a 10-year-old grandson, and I am afraid for the world that we are passing off to them. And I feel specifically that the war that we are involved in right now has definitely makes us less safe, not more safe, by the efforts in the last 4 years. And the debt that we pass on to them. My son works a little above minimum wage here in Oregon, supporting his 10-year-old son, does not have health coverage. When I think of Oregon's share of the budget to fund the war, when my own son works daily and is not able to have health care coverage, that causes me great concern. In the week preceding last Monday's hearings, Oregon was named, there were news coverage, Oregon was one of the top 10 states for casualties in the war, and the report focused on the fact that in communities and in states where unemployment is high, when hunger is high, and we know that until quite recently Oregon was the top hunger state in the United States, that for and we have one of the top 10 numbers of casualties in the war, the military enlistments go up as the state has less work opportunities and that we're meeting our own basic needs. When I hear along the coast that that some of the counties are having to cut resources because they can't fund it as federal fundings are not coming in. And again, when I think of my grandson and son and the debt that we are leaving to them to pay off for this war, I feel that I want us to look at other ways to be members of the world community and make peace. And so I urge that all of us, I thank you for hearing this measure, and I urge a yes in support of not escalating the troops and bringing those troops that we have deployed there back home. Thank you for hearing.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions of this witness? Okay, thank you. Please go ahead.
My name is Ben Fain. I'm from Aloha. 50 years ago, I was an 18-year-old private in the Marine Corps. I spent 3 years on active duty and 2 years in the active reserves. For about 10 years, I was very fortunate. For about 10 years, from 1953 to about 1963, the U.S. was not in an active war. I have also been in a Washington County peace vigil since August of 2005. It's an active group, and we meet there weekly. I have worked with a group of young people here in the state of Oregon for the past 5 years. I drive the bus for the Oregon Bus Project. These people are of an age of about 16 to 30 years old. They are prime age for draftee. If a draft were enacted, there would be quite a few of them that would have to immediately sign up, all of the males. I do not want this to happen. I appreciate very much you having this hearing and listening to the people, taking this input from all of us. War is nonpartisan and apolitical. When that bullet comes out of the barrel, politics and diplomacy are gone out the window. We've heard a lot about WMDs. The insurgents are not the only ones that have WMDs. This country, in our name, is using WMDs over there, and they're very indiscriminate, just as indiscriminate as the ones that are being used against us. The Marine Corps has had a saying that you've probably heard, and it's Semper Fi. I have heard that used for everything from right on, brother, let's be together, to some four-letter things that I can't repeat here, and it depends on the context and who is saying this. I'm still angry at what happened in Lebanon. There was a commandant in the Marine Corps, and they are great people for using this saying. I went to one of the young men that had been wounded in the embassy bombing there, and I don't know if this was his last words, but he bent over this young man, probably at Bethesda Naval Hospital, and he said that the young man said Semper Fi to him. Well, I prefer to have thought ever since then that young man was using it in the context that I used it and some of my friends used it at times when we were not so happy. And if that general, I think, really knew what that young man was saying to him, he might have had a much different outlook for the rest of his day, at least. I do not recommend that any of you folks here go out and buy a handgun, but I would recommend that each one of you maybe take a concealed weapons class. In that class, you're going to learn what it's like if someone accosts you and you feel a need to draw that weapon, or you think that maybe you will be injured. And these people that are being sent over there are going through that every day, every morning when they wake up. They're having these feelings sometime during that day. Some really intense things happen to you when you think about drawing a weapon or when you think that someone is going to hurt you. Physically, you focus in on just what's in front of you at that time. Your breathing becomes real fast. Your hearing dissipates, and you are focused on that thing. This is a very intense thing to happen to you. And if you have an instructor for a concealed weapons class, which I have taken a few years ago, that instructor was able to make you feel like you were at that point. And it's something that you need to think about. I know that we are so far from this war here that most people will never go through this in their life. But I think that's an excellent thing for everybody to experience and maybe think about when they're focusing on something like this resolution. I've heard many times in the last 4 or 5 years that politics are local, and that this, I think, is a good thing, and I think we should have started here 4 or 5 years ago on this. I feel like that now is the time, and I've heard deployment. I've heard people say that 6 months, 8 months, a year. They were saying that a year ago, and I personally feel like that all we need to do is tell those folks, get your personal stuff, you're going to get on a plane, and we're leaving here this afternoon. The equipment and everything that they have taken over there, and I would bet anyone who listens to the news in this that's in this room now has heard that a lot of this equipment is junk. You can bet it is. It's not worth bringing home. There is just speculation, and no one can tell you that there will or will not for sure be a bloodbath over there. This was said over and over again before we left Vietnam, and I don't recall us asking anyone's permission to leave Vietnam. I think that we should just declare victory over there satisfy everyone, give out all the medals you need. Those are cheap. Those don't cost anything. And say that we're going to leave there and that you've done a good job. I think that just getting on a plane to go over there is a good job, good enough to earn them the right to turn right around and come back home. I would like to thank all of you, and like a good politician, I'm going to pass out the literature to you now, and I hope you'll put this in your office and look at it, and that it will remind you of everything you heard here today and last week, every time that you look at it. And I, again, really want to thank all of you for being part of this.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, thank you both very much. Next, we'll call Carol DeWinkle. Give it to our assistant over there. Yeah. She'll take care of it for you. Carol DeWinkle, Elijah Smith, and Dan Handelman. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Carol DeWinkle. I live here in Salem. I want to thank all of you for the opportunity to testify in favor of this House Joint Memorial Number 9. One of my sons is a medic in the Army's 10th Mountain Division. He has been in Baghdad since September of last year. He's scheduled to stay there till at least July of this year, if not longer. After all, we never know whether it's extended or not. We hope to celebrate his 24th birthday later this month. My son volunteered for the Army after he finished his college work, his college degree in criminal justice. He joined despite the fact that he considered the war in Iraq illegal and thought President Bush was very wrong to claim that Iraq had anything to do with 9/11. But he said, "Dad, I can't wait until this illegal war is over. I want to join the Army." Since last September, my son's platoon's task has been primarily to keep a few roads safe. That means that they go up and down with their Humvees and try to see those IEDs before they blow up in their face. One Humvee in his platoon was totaled last fall without serious injuries to the soldiers and to himself, so that was very fortunate. But 2 weeks ago, another platoon from the 10th Mountain Division was not so lucky. Three soldiers were killed, two were severely wounded. One of the killed soldiers was a good friend of my son, a fellow medic, and needless to say, my son has a very hard time with this. I talked with my son this weekend, and he sounded more frustrated than ever before. Without going into a lot of details, I just want to try to illustrate it. And there are a lot of emotions here, and I'll try to keep it relatively simple. Many local Iraqis know when and where these very, very powerful IEDs are buried, sometimes directly in front of the locals' homes. Now, these are very big devices. It takes hours to bury them. And you can't do that without being noticed. My son said that even if they have the window curtains closed, but apparently they do that quite often, they really know that that's happening in front of their homes. Yet nobody will warn the Americans. And when my son's platoon is lucky enough to discover such an IED before it blows up in their face and under their Humvee and arrest those locals, they're told by American military lawyers to let them go, because otherwise their feelings may get hurt. He told me, "Dad, we are not trained for this kind of work. This is peacekeeping work. We are a fighting unit, but most of the time we don't know who our enemies are. We don't know who the bad guys are. We don't know who the good guys are." He believes that the Iraqis right now totally rely on the Americans for basic security functions. He strongly feels, and he begged me to emphasize that, he strongly feels that we need to set a very clear date for withdrawal. Until then, the Iraqis won't take care of themselves. And he and his fellow soldiers will continue to be in harm's way. Needless to say, and I think you can see it from my face, our family is very, very upset. And we live with the fear to hear a knock on our door by military personnel every day. I therefore strongly support this resolution, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Carl, and certainly our hopes and prayers are very much with you and your family. Please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Elijah Smith. I served as a sergeant and a squad leader with Bravo Company, 6 Engineers, in Iraq as part of Operation Enduring Freedom. This was nearly 4 years ago, and when I read about what's going on in Iraq now, it's like it's an entirely different war or occupation than when I was there. That's my opinion, that the continued presence of the American military is undermining the legitimacy of the Iraqi government in the eyes of its citizens, and that it's an impediment to the Iraqi army from standing up and defending their country. In light of this, a withdrawal, in my opinion, shouldn't be construed as giving up without completing the job. It is my opinion that the job cannot be completed until the withdrawal begins. That's why I'm here to support House Joint Memorial 9, which urges against escalation and pushes for the withdrawal of our troops. This is an issue that I've given a lot of consideration, and I am concerned about what might happen once the withdrawal begins. But in reading the analysis of experts, I've come to the strong conclusion that a withdrawal is the best course of action. The competing ideas are that if we pull out, the Iraq forces will be forced to step up and defend their country, or perhaps the country will descend into chaos. The truth is, no one knows for sure, but there's one thing that is certain, that there's a civil war in Iraq going on now. And there's little or no chance that we can impose stability. According to a report put out by the Brookings Institution, in the few instances where a nation was able to contain a civil war, it required a massive invasion followed by an occupying force of a ratio of 20 soldiers per 1,000 civilians. With Iraq, this equates to roughly 500,000 troops. Of course, this is not going to happen even with this proposed surge. We don't have the material capability or the desire to go down such a path. So what we're getting instead is the so-called new direction with 20,000 more troops and the appointment of General Petraeus. As brave and professional as our troops are, and as brilliant as General Petraeus is, they're being put in an untenable situation, and in effect, this is nothing more than stay the course. Unfortunately for this administration and for all of us, there is no reset button that allows us to start over every time we appoint someone new. From the lies that precipitated this illegitimate and unnecessary war of choice, to the gross mismanagement of the initial invasion, to the complete lack of planning to secure the peace, this endeavor has been a catastrophic failure from day one. The same attitude that got us into this situation still persists. The administration refuses to listen to or take advice from anyone outside of their inner circle. According to the Baker-Hamilton Commission, which came up with, I believe, 70-some-odd recommendations, among these are three recommendations. Recommendation 22 states that the president should state that the United States does not seek permanent military bases in Iraq. Recommendation 40 states that the United States should not make an open-ended commitment to keep large numbers of American troops deployed in Iraq. And Recommendation 41, the United States must make it clear to the Iraqi government that the United States could carry out its plans, including planned redeployments, even if Iraq does not implement its plan changes. All of these set the stage for withdrawal. There isn't sufficient public support to gamble on the deployment of the 500,000 it would take to stabilize the country. With the situation grave and deteriorating, as it's described, the only sane option is to begin the withdrawal of our forces while providing the Iraqi government with the help they need. So what's stopping us? Within the president and his inner circle, I believe there's no regard for the sentiment of Americans. They have their own reasons for continuing the war. But among our representatives and senators, there's a fear of being seen as not supporting the troops.
So as a former troop, I have a few things I'd like to share regarding supporting the troops. I and many others like me didn't sign up to go overseas because we love war. We hated it. It kept us from our families, our homes, our jobs, all the things we love, and from the country that we love. We signed up because we wanted to serve our country. We love our country, and we wanted what was best for it. But it's becoming more and more apparent that this war has been very lucrative for very few, but a horrible drain of blood and treasure for this country. Of course, there were no weapons of mass destruction, and according to the Iraq Study Group, the global jihad movement has only been strengthened. The question is using our troops to enforce a failed policy supporting them when this policy is anathema to the very reason they joined? Putting the troops in the middle of an intractable civil war and saying, I support you, is not supporting the troops. Putting a yellow magnet on your truck is not supporting the troops. Something that touched me personally was when the president was talking to Jim Lehrer, and he asked the president, if this war is as important as you say, then why aren't you not asking the American people to sacrifice more? And his response will stick with me. He said, the Americans, and I'm quoting, sacrifice peace of mind when they see the terrible images of violence on TV every night. I mean, we've got a fantastic economy here in the United States, but when you think about the psychology of the country, it is somewhat down because of this war. That's our commander-in-chief. To me, this is not sacrificing, and this is not supporting the troops. Disregard for a second that major network news does not show these graphic images. A quote that I heard was, our media shows the rockets taking off, and only Al Jazeera shows when they land. So the sacrifice, it's a sacrifice to the Americans to have to tolerate the news of deaths during their primetime television viewing. When your commander-in-chief says something like this, it should be a wake-up call to all true patriots who actually care about this country and its service members, who haven't been fooled into thinking that dissent is unpatriotic. Among the things that my platoon sergeant told me before we left Iraq was, when you're in a war zone and you're not thinking about liberating Iraqis or fighting for freedom or anything, you're worried about the Marines to your left and to your right, and that was something that I found to be very true. When it came time for us to regress back to the United States, we had to decide who would stay on rear party, which is a group of Marines that preps the equipment. We have HES, that's bulldozers and things, that all need to be cleaned very thoroughly before they can be sent back to the U.S. So nobody wanted to stay back, of course, so they drew numbers to see who would have to stay. And the two Marines that ended up getting picked were two Marines that they went to boot camp, MCT, and then MOS school. All this is just the preliminary training. And then from what they call the gauntlet, they came to our unit, and that drill we were activated, and then we went to Iraq. So these Marines hadn't seen their families in for any appreciable amount of time, for about a year or so. So I and a corporal who was just married, which I think is amazing, we volunteered to take their spots so that they could go back and see their families. In my opinion, that's how you support the troops. We have a saying that they always say when someone starts complaining in the Marine Corps, mission accomplishment comes first, then troop welfare. Well, according to our president, our mission is accomplished, so it's time to look out for the troops, and if we want to support them, we need to bring them home.
Elijah, thank you very much for your testimony and for your courage. And would it be possible to get, it looked like you were reading, would it be possible to get a copy of your testimony?
It's a modified. I can certainly give that to you, though.
We would really appreciate it. Any questions for this witness? Thank you very much. Please go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Dan Handelman. I spoke to you a little bit last week. I'm with the group Peace and Justice Works, and we didn't have a chance to look over the amendments in thorough before last week's hearing, so I just wanted to address them. I did send you a copy of the testimony you've been handed by email previously. And I'm kind of new to the process here in Salem, and I don't know how hard it is to make amendments at this point to the amendments you have. Our goal is to get this a resolution like this passed as quickly as possible. So if this is going to slow it down, then we'll probably have to live with the pieces of this that we're uncomfortable with. But I think you heard already from a couple people some of the language that we have concerns about. So I'll just try to cut right to the proposals that we had about how to deal with it. The issue of changing the term military occupation of Iraq to the term military activities in Iraq, which is on amendments on your page one of your amendments, lines 11 and 12. And this is in reference to the strained capacities of the armed forces, National Guard, and the reserves. And I think it was Olivia Watt referred to some of the things that are going on in Iraq beyond military activities, including the building of the embassy, the permanent bases, private contractors, certainly, and the question of the control of Iraq's oil reserves. And if the word occupation isn't comfortable for people who would like to sign on to this memorial, we're suggesting that the line should read military and other U.S.-initiated activities in Iraq. And that way it kind of covers all these things without necessarily having to use the term occupation if that's what the objection was. The second one was on page 2, lines 15 to 18, talking about the adoption of parts of the Iraq Study Group report, where, again, I think Olivia referenced this, expanding advisory assistance to the elected government of Iraq implies that the U.S. will keep some form of military presence in Iraq for unknown length of time. And we're suggesting that if you take that away, because there's a part of the Iraq Study Group report that's referenced that I think we do support, and I hope everybody does, the idea of having regional diplomacy. So we support leaving that in, but perhaps just having a sentence to say the U.S. needs to provide support and assistance to the elected Iraqi government as they work to stabilize and rebuild their nation, and that way you're not necessarily calling for Americans to be in the country, but just letting the Iraqi people know that we support them as they rebuild. And the third concern that we had was on also on page 2 and lines 19 to 20, where it changes the deadline to begin the withdrawal from August 1st, 2007 to the first fiscal quarter of 2008, which I had to look up. That means from between October and December of this year. So it's 2 to 5 months, but we were hopeful that if there's any logistical way to start bringing the troops home earlier than even August 1st, that might happen. So maybe there's a way to write the language. So it says, it already says as soon as possible, in the language of the original amendment and original resolution and in the amendments. So maybe I could say beginning in the 5 to 8 months after March 1, 2007 at the latest. So those were just the suggestions we had. And again, I don't know what the process is for making those changes, but thank you for the opportunity to testify a second time.
Thank you for your testimony. Just to clarify, the process and our rules do not allow us to make changes without going through legislative council, which would require some delay. So that answers that question. Any questions for this witness? Okay, thank you all for your testimony. Thanks for being here. And next we'll call Susan Crowley, Richard Lewis, and Wayne Brady. Actually, Wayne, why don't you hold on? Let's call Susan Crowley and Richard Lewis, and then we'll have you come up separately.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum. Good morning. And members. Let me see if I understand. Thanks to Mr. Stembridge, I did receive a copy of the proposed amendments to the original bill. And so fiscal year 2008 would mean September, October, November of 2008?
Madam Chair, I believe it would be the first quarter would be October through December of 2008. So it would be October, November, December.
All right, so that's when the proposed...
Actually, Madam Chair, 2007, October to December 2007.
2007, right.
Yeah. Right. But this says first quarter of fiscal year 2008 in the proposed amendments.
Right, correct. Fiscal year 2008, Madam Chair, it's counterintuitive, but it begins October 1, 2007, and then continues through the first...
That's correct.
What we would consider
right.
Three quarters.
So then proposed redeployment would be urged for the first quarter.
Yeah,
so
could you, I'm sorry, please identify yourself first.
Excuse me, I apologize. Susan Crowley of Hood River. So this would suggest redeployment by the fall of 2007 then. Okay, thank you. Then please disregard the extent to which my comments assume that meant 2008. Mm-hmm. this war was lost before it began. Anyone who was paying attention in 2002 knew that the only thing holding Iraq together was the heavy hand of Saddam Hussein. Ask George W. Bush's father, a sophisticated international strategist who did not depose Saddam because he knew civil war would result. His son, who didn't have a clue, waded in like a bull in a china shop, and now we have a mess of a civil war to deal with. The mess will not go away. It's the result of hostilities hundreds, sometimes thousands of years old. Americans cannot begin to comprehend the situation. Only Iraqis can sort it out. Now that we've upset the apple cart, it will be a very bloody sorting. And having set this civil war in motion, we cannot begin to fix it. How long will we stay in the middle of the civil war? How many more American soldiers must die because other American soldiers have died? How many more Americans will die because we can't admit the truth? HJM 9 itemizes a horrible list of truths that we're now admitting. Thousands dead, tens of thousands physically and mentally maimed, families destroyed, hundreds of billions of dollars lost that could have helped American communities. It doesn't mention the blasted lives of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, destruction of an ancient culture, or the new generation of jihadists that our own government now admits that we have created. But anyone paying attention knows these truths as well, and I think that everyone in this room is aware of these factors. Now, here's where my testimony will have to be modified on the fly. Please recommend that we cut our losses and cut them quickly. The course recommended by the original draft of HJM 9. And quite frankly, the changes in language do not matter so much to me. I understand the political reasons for making these changes. I realize the symbolism behind them. I prefer the original draft, but so be it. As long as the timetable for proposed redeployment does not stretch beyond the fall of this year, I find this draft courageous, frankly. And I would like to thank you all for your role in helping us as a nation admit the truth in whatever form you finally decide to do so. It will help save lives. It may seem indirect, but one action like this on top of other actions like this is the only thing that makes a difference. The only questions are, how soon will these lives be saved, and how many? Thank you so much for your action.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Richard Lewis, and I live near Salem. I would like to share a member from the Salem Friends meeting of the Religious Society of Friends, Quakers. From our beginnings in England in 1652, we have opposed killings and war. We work for peace in the world. We search out the seeds of war in ourselves and our way of life. We refuse to join in actions which lead to destruction and death. We seek ways to cooperate to save life and strengthen the bonds of unity among all people. This is from our faith and practice. The Society of War sees war as, the Society of Friends sees war as inconsistent with the spirit of Christ. A declaration made to King Charles II in 1660 states, "We utterly deny all outward wars and strife, and fightings with outward weapons for any end or any under any pretense whatsoever. This is our testimony to the whole world. Therefore, we cannot learn war anymore. We extend our loving concern to President Bush and all world leaders and pray that they may find ways to resolve the Iraq war without further escalations and killing. We believe that diplomacy, mediation, and other means must be pursued. We know there are no simple answers to the current situation in the Middle East, but we are clear that further killing is not the answer. Therefore, we wish to express our support for House Joint Memorial 9. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you both.
Thank you.
And next we'll call Wayne Brady and Connie Law. Honey?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Could I begin?
You can go ahead. Thank you.
My name is Wayne Brady. I live in Salem. I'm here representing myself. I have included in the package that's being circulated articles written by Army Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters and Dr. Victor Davis Hansen. I hope you'll take the time to read these. These are people who have studied warfare and have a good understanding of how wars work. Colonel Peters is in frequent communication with officers now serving in Iraq, and as a result has a good idea of what's going on there. Based on his conversations with officers, he thinks we can still win and it would be madness to give up. Dr. Hansen has written a number of books on ancient warfare and has written commentary on warfare in both ancient and modern. He states that while mistakes have been made, none are unprecedented and none are fatal. He is also convinced that only the U.S. military can save democracy in Iraq. We've never fought a war without mistakes. This one's no different. We must adapt as we go. And that is what the President and General Petraeus are trying to do now. It's obvious that what's being done in 2006 was not working. It would be a grave mistake not to give this plan a chance to work. I also think that withdrawal is a recipe for disaster. We are not talking about just Iraq. A loss in Iraq would lead to a far more difficult situation in the worldwide war on terror. If we lose Iraq, Afghanistan will come under more serious attack, and after that, the rest of the Middle East, then Africa, and eventually Europe and the United States. I worry that memorials like this and debates about withdrawal in Congress make it harder for us to win. The Iraqis see this and wonder if they should help us. We should give the General Petraeus a chance to win. If the plan doesn't work in 6 months or so, then a new plan will have to be developed. But withdrawal now, I think, would be a disaster. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And Connie, please go ahead. Good morning.
Yeah, I have to talk slow so everybody can understand. I have a, in English, my sister called a handicap in English. But anyway, I wrote down what I want to say. My name is Hatsuya Ro, but everyone call me Connie. This name comes from my sweet husband's time in the U.S. Navy. Every time he went to a sea, he would think about me constantly, and eventually shorten my name to Connie. Anyway, what is going on with this country? Does anyone know how to solve this problem? I know President Bush made a big mistake in directing this country, costing away too much in lives and funds. The citizens of Oregon have voted for the best people for this state, expecting them to do a good job. I believe that best solution we have is to have consultation with all the politicians without arguing and chastising, and instead use our past mistakes as educational tools to better ensure a safer future. I believe all Oregon citizens are behind me when I say I want to bring Oregon troops home as soon as possible. I also believe we should treat all veterans and their families with care and kindness rather than leaving them to feel abandoned. Most veterans who have served in other countries have hearing health problems and are ashamed well, what they had to do for this country. What are they dying for? What is the reason for this? I have experienced horrible things in my life, but nothing compared to the time during World War II. I was working with the Japanese Navy and during the daytime, and was attending a school at night to obtain a high education. My life was going well until the U.S. attacked Japan with an atomic bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. On the way back to the carrier, the bombs were dropped and destroyed the capital city of Nagasaki. I was very blessed and was protected by a rock shelter, which saved my life. The following morning, there was no available transportation, so I walked among the fire and smoke-filled street, and I could smell the burnt human's hair. It was then I heard a cry for help in the taking care of a Japanese secret document. We burnt all the documents before our enemy could get hold on them. August 6, 1945, atomic bombs, Hiroshima, and death of 250,000. In Nagasaki, death 140,000. And less than a month after the Japanese force formally surrendered on the deck of the USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay, August 22nd, 1945, night, Sentoku, EI-56, Emperor Hirohito reported surrender. I am a former enemy of the U.S., but now I'm proud to be a United States citizen, which I obtain legally, unlikely many immigrants today. I have raised great children and wonderful grandchildren here, and it truly is a land of dreams. I am not positive, but my recent bone cancer could have been from a radioactive bomb. I am not proud of that past and look desperately for a better future. I am here to speak to all the politicians about what they are elected here to do, such as deal with state issue, taking care of Oregon National Guard troops, protect Oregon from any kind of attack, including education system, health care, eliminating government waste, improving the welfare system, as well as the judicial system, and dealing with illegal immigration. These things need to be in the spotlight and get the attention they deserve. Most recently, illegal immigration need to stop and be dealt with. It is disrupting nearly all of the previously listed topics and costing this state greatly. Oregon needed to improve on these things and more so we can live in peace again. Thank you all for listening to the citizens' opinion. And especially thanks to the House Representative who care for the Oregon citizen and responding at my letter. To John Lim, Peter Buckley, Brian Klein, and Jeff Buckley, Vicky Berger, and even Theodore Krongoski, and Kim Ledger, and Kevin Cameron. They are responding at my data. Thank you so much. I'm so appreciate you doing a wonderful job.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you.
And next we'll call Harvey Thorstedt, Rose Lewis, and Robert Marvos. Please come forward. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Harvey Thorstedt, Commander of U.S. Navy, retired, Vietnam veteran, President, Veterans for Peace, Portland Chapter. I served in Vietnam for years as an advisor. Myself and 29 Vietnamese, day after day, week after week, rice for breakfast, rice for lunch, rice for dinner, day after day. I'm familiar with the terror of the Vietnamese at the experience on B-52 drops. If you've never experienced anything like that, it's comparable to a Richter 8 scale earthquake. The ground shakes, and it makes a normal thunderstorm seem mild. It's terrorizing. I'm familiar with free fire zones in Vietnam. It's a geographical area set aside where our forces shoot anything that moves. Our gunships go over and hunt people, men, women, children. We spread Agent Orange over the jungles where they hide so they can be seen easier, to hunt them like rabbits. I've talked with some that look at it just that way. They go over in the gunships, and it's like they're hunting rabbits in the forest. For others, their conscience bothers them. They know it's not right. It's not what they're teaching. They know what they're doing. I suspect those, if they're still alive, are suffering what you come to be known as post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. It happens in war a lot. While I was in Vietnam, my brother was also there, flying off a carrier, flying A-4s, dropping bombs, as his mission may have called. We both saw the futility of this war, the wrongness of it. It was ran from the Oval Office, much like this one, the military being just the arm to carry it out. We jointly wrote, brother and brother, letters to our U.S. Congress at the time saying we should get out now. It still took years. Our view is we are a nation of law and order. The highest law in the land is the U.S. Constitution. an image like an analogy comes to mind of our old classic Western. The hero in the white hat rides into town. The town is run by corrupt officials and bandits. With much drama, the people of the community rise up, and the hero with the white hand wins, and law and order is restored. That analogy is not too far off from what we have today, except the corrupt officials is our own executive branch of the government. The heroes are the people, city officials, county officials, state officials, and many of the U.S. Congress. We're stepping up as the heroes, the white hats, to set things right, for we know they are not right. The Bush regime considers themselves above the law, above the Constitution. They violated time and again, as many others have testified before you. I urge you to strongly support, and thank you for bringing this resolution before us. Concerning how to get out of Iraq, there is no clean way out, no matter what we do. It's messed. There's no clean way out. I've been saying that for years, and it becomes more true each day. Get out now before it gets worse. And it does. Thank you, and may this resolution help restore what's right.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Rosenbaum and this committee for holding these hearings. My name is Rose Lewis. I live northeast of Salem. I want to express my support for Joint Memorial 9, asking that the surge not go forward and the Iraq War be ended. I am a member of the Religious Society of Friends, also known as Quakers, and I embrace their peace testimony wholeheartedly. Friends believe that all people are children of God and that every person is worthy of infinite respect. Our words and lives should testify to this belief and should stand as a positive witness in a world still torn by strife and violence. As part of our religious practice, we regularly ask ourselves these questions. Do I live in the virtue of that life and power which takes away the occasion of all war? Do I refrain from taking part in war as inconsistent with the spirit of Christ? What am I doing to remove the causes of war and to bring about the conditions of peace? I believe that each of us must do what we can to make this a better world. I would like to close with a quotation from William Penn, an early Quaker. He said, "True godliness does not turn people out of the world, but enables them to live better in it and excites their endeavors to mend it." I appreciate your supporting this memorial, and I hope it can be sent on to Washington. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Robert Marvelous from Bend, Oregon. I applaud your considering this joint memorial number 9. Senator Byrd from Virginia, in opposing this war, in one of his speeches, said that a nation based on lies cannot sustain itself. In 1939, before invading Poland, Hitler told his generals, I will put out propaganda justifying our attack. Never mind whether it is the truth or not. The victor is never asked what is true. While the large loss of life in this war, both among American troops and Iraqis people, is tragic, if there was only one loss of life in an unjust, illegal war, it would still be wrong. I'm very concerned about the practices and the policies that our government practices that contribute to the instability of the world. And I urge you to pass this. It's a good start in changing the terrible policies that our government has been policing for the past number of years. And bringing the troops home now is desperately needed. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you all for being here. We have two more witnesses signed up to testify. They are Curtis Bell and Chris Polk. Please come forward. Good morning.
Good morning.
Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. My name is Chris Volk. I'm from Corvallis, and I spent a considerable portion of my life in the last 4 to 6 years trying to address some of the situations that have happened, and I feel compelled to come here because it's an issue that predominates our society and the news and the public discourse and everything. I think we need to bring it to a rapid conclusion. I think recently the discussion seems to want to be centered around addressing the problem like it's some sort of isolatable. What I call military speak. They talk a lot about the insurgents, which, like, there's some isolatable group of very bad people that can just be located and wiped out. Now, I like to use the analogy of if force of Muslim troops from the Middle East, about 1.5 million, decided to come to the United States and to change our leaders, regime change, in other words, and God knows we need it right now. But if they were to do this and then come here and remove our leader and then start to dismantle our security apparatus, our means for achieving law and order, and then even though a wide majority of the people here wanted them to leave, they kept staying and they decided to begin to implant their political system and economic system, during which process they said they were trying to rebuild our economy, but instead of hiring United States workers, they brought in companies from their own country and their own part of the world. And I'd have to ask, would there be one person in this room or in the United States that would not oppose and be at their wits' end to do something to get these people out of here? And I think the analogy is apt. And I think, but let's say, for example, that it was true that there were just some bad people called insurgents in their country, and all we had to do was wipe them out. One of the problems with that is that these people, whether they're good or bad, are going to have brothers and sisters, they're going to have cousins, they're going to have friends, they're going to have community members who are going to back them up. They're going to become incensed if they get hurt, you know, and they're going to have parents, they're going to have children. And the way we look at this problem is sort of a military context. It's sort of divorced from reality, the fact that all these situations are a complex of social, economic, tribal, religious connections and associations, and that if if we don't know exactly what we're doing. And I think there is a role for the United States to play in that region if we send in the right kind of people who are trained to help in rebuilding society and nurturing democracy and things like that. But troops are not, the military is not trained to do that. It's pretty unrealistic or deceptive to think that they could be helping that country transition into democracy. Elections are not synonymous with democracy. We had those in the Soviet Union and South American dictatorships, and we've had elections recently in this country that have obviously been where results have been altered or people have been kept from voting by the hundreds of thousands. And so I think that the current objectives that they're talking about are not only delusional, but they're an attempt to keep people's minds off of the real rationales for us being there. And I think some of those are very well stated in position documents of the Project for a New American Century, which has a strong relationship with the Bush administration, and some of its members like Vice President Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz, et cetera, were part of, makes no bones about the idea the United States should be taking on the role of the legitimate or remaining world superpower, and that we have the right and responsibility to project our power and influence into that region of the world to influence events and control resources. And the Vice President has made no bones about his intention to have more control over Middle Eastern oil. And I think the recent agreements, I don't know if they've been passed yet, but they're on the legislative docket to give major U.S. and European oil companies substantial profits, 75% of the drilling costs, I guess, and then 20% of the subsequent oil profits in Iraq, which is twice the norm. And so if we think we're going to stop people in that region from fighting for their freedom, for their resources, this whole situation reminds me both of the operational definition of insanity, which is where someone repeats a behavior which is bad or destructive and expects a different outcome, or the addictive dynamic where somebody is doing something that's bad for themselves and bad for other people, but in order to get the same effect or the high or whatever, you know, the control, they'll drink more or smoke more or go to a more powerful substance. And this surge is very similar to that, because the whole development or history of U.S. involvement in Iraq has been destructive to that society and to the people or troops that have been involved there that have been put in the middle of this policy. And we need to realize it is based on an addiction. It's our desire for oil and for control of those resources, for power, to try to influence events. And there's also a sort of a it's hard to describe these, you know, because this is a new situation and stuff, but there are people in power that seem to be overly imbued with the military mindset and the culture and being in the war room and things like that. And it's all been very upsetting and divisive for people in this country. And we need to come back to where we stand, I think, as Americans, as decent people, as intelligent people who do care for other people in the world. And we want to help them, but we also have to help our own people. And we just need to come to terms with what's going on and use our common sense and sanity and say this is enough. 78% of the Iraqi people don't want the U.S. troops there. Even Republican Senator Chuck Hagel from Nebraska says that. Now, our major stated objective there is to democratize the Middle East. Now, if there's 70 to 80% of the Iraqi people that don't want us there, and we say we're there for democratic purposes, then by definition we would have to leave. So I think this resolution is a basic recognition of all those things, and it'd be smart policy. And I think we have so many problems we need to deal with here in Oregon and here in this country, and I frankly myself would like to be able to concentrate on those things, not to have to deal with this ridiculous situation in Iraq. And thanks for letting me have the opportunity to speak. And
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for doing this and for hearing citizens of Oregon on this issue, which many of us feel is absolutely critical. As the gentleman just said, I think the resources of attention, that we can't think about other things, clearly all the other needs that we have and things as this kind of war continues. My name is Curtis Bell. I'm with a group called Oregonians Against the War, which has the purpose of bringing home to Oregonians all the costs of this war and getting them to act accordingly. And also I'm with People of Faith for Peace, another organization that attempts to bring faith groups' voices out more prominently on this issue. I'm not going to talk about the immorality, the illegality, and the danger that this war presents to the United States, nor about the consequences of withdrawal. I think the main point there is that we are engaged in an effort to dominate the future of that country, and as long as we're trying to do that, there will be Iraqis fighting us to prevent that domination. We have to surrender the effort to dominate, create an international and national peace conferences to bring about reconciliation, and be willing to fund the reconstruction of Iraq. What I do want to mention is the use of our resources, which hasn't been brought out perhaps enough. I'm a scientist, and in my field of neuroscience, about $2 billion is spent every year in basic neuroscience by the National Institutes of Health. And every few weeks or so, I get demands from my national societies, tell your congressmen not to cut funds for neuroscience, not to cut funds for NIH. And I'm tired of that, because increasing the money for science means decreasing money for health care, for mass transit, for education, etc. I'm sick of hearing that. And so I begin to direct my attention to our national societies to attend also to the pie, and not just to a little piece of a fixed pie, but to recognize that so much of the money is going into the military. And I would say the same thing. I would say that every organization that we have access to democratically needs to work on these issues of changing the American priorities. For the war in Iraq is now costing about $12 billion or so a month. That's more than the total biennial budget of the state of Oregon. If you look at the total defense spending, it's now about $680 billion. That is $100 billion more than all the rest of the world spends together on the military. It comes down to the $2 billion that is asked for neuroscience is spent in about 3 days in Iraq, 4 days in Iraq. So my point is that we must ask through all of the democratic organizations that we have access to that have democracy, and that includes the state of Oregon, through our legislature, to work to end this war and all of the horrors that it's leading rise to, but also to look at the larger picture of reducing our whole policy of attempting to dominate the world with military. Why do we need 700 bases around the world? Why do we need to spend $100 billion more than the rest of the world spends on military? If you look at all these other countries, they've given up the effort to dominate the world militarily. Germany, France, Portugal, Spain, Japan, and they're better off for it. They're using their resources, devoting their attention to the human needs, and that is, I think, must be our goal also. All of the organizations that are responsible for those human needs need to work towards a different set of priorities. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And that completes our list of witnesses. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Joint Memorial 9? Okay. Okay. Thank you, and please identify yourself for our record.
I'm Jerry Gentry, and I live in Salem. I am, which was earlier mentioned here, I need to just address real quickly the topic of PTSD. My life ended as a normal functioning human being when I served in Vietnam. I have PTSD. I'm 100% disabled. And I just like to say that this, I won't call it a war, but an action by Bush is creating a whole new generation of young men and women that will come home and have PTSD, as well as physical injuries, and be disabled the rest of their lives. And since Bush took office, and my symptoms have just manifested themselves, and I have the same feelings, same intensity of my PTSD that I had when I came back from Vietnam. And it just seems like, you know, it's never going to end. It's just one thing after another, and this surge is the latest thing. So I'm just glad you let me hear what I had to say, and I thank this committee, and I just hope this measure can pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Well, I think we've had a lot of really very moving testimony and difficult testimony. And colleagues, I do intend to move this memorial today. We do have a floor session coming up at 10:30, so I would entertain a motion. Yes. I'll close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 9, open a work session on House Joint Memorial 9. And Vice Chair Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 9. Do you move the floor with a due pass recommendation?
Actually, we're looking for a motion on the amendment.
I'm sorry, motion, okay. May I move the dash 1 amendments to House Joint Memorial 9?
Representative Buckley moves the dash 1 amendments to House Joint Memorial 9. Is there objection? Without objection, amendments are adopted. And now, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 9 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Buckley has moved House Joint Memorial 9 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Committee members, are there their discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Well, I thank you, Madam Chair. Like you said, we listened to a lot of heartfelt and touching testimony. And, you know, we probably all know somebody who has or is participating over in Iraq or in the Middle East. And, you know, obviously there's strong opinions, most of which we've heard in this committee have been in support of this memorial. But I just can't support it at this time. But I just feel like we're sitting here as politicians voting on a non-binding memorial in this committee that we're going to send to the Oregon House to be voted on to send to another big body of politicians, requesting that they tell our field commanders what's best to do. And I just don't think that's really our place. I just feel like, though I wish war only hurt the bad guy, it really doesn't end that way. And I mean by bad guy, I mean the ones that blow up public markets and kidnap and behead journalists and film it for the world to see. I believe this memorial sends the wrong message, and discussions of whether we should be there or not aren't real pertinent right now, because the fact remains that we are there right now, and we've been warned by diplomats in the area well before the world's war started that we shouldn't have gone in there. But we'd be ignoring them again, because they've warned us time and again that if we leave before it is stabilized, there will be dire consequences. And not only to just Iraq, but the entire region. And I would hope that we recognize that, you know, as members of the House Elections, Ethics, and Rules Committee, we're not real well equipped to give a prescriptive statement to Congress on how this war should progress and or where the troops should be, or especially what time schedule they should be on. I don't feel like we're well equipped to do that, and I would hope that instead we would urge Congress to give the troops all the necessary support, reinforcements, training, tools and supplies to protect them and help them accomplish their mission. And I have to vote no, because I feel like this is sending them the wrong message when we should be giving them all support we can.
So. Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Esquivel.
First of all, I'd like to thank the veterans, and more importantly, those Vietnam veterans, welcome home. We never got a welcome home. I, too, was in the same situation as they were. The military is a vicious dog. You have it on a leash, but when you let it go, you let the dog go. We have not done that. We have failed to do so. We have the dog again out there, like when I was in Vietnam in 1969, 1970, to where the dog can almost reach the goal, but politicians hold the dog back. It's a no-win situation. I remember the first time that I ever stopped in a cafe. I was just reminiscing on that as these veterans were speaking. It was a little round table, and I had an M16 down with my back to the wall. So I was drinking a Coke. Why? You didn't know who the bad guy was or who the good guy was. I think we're in a similar situation in Iraq right now. We had the choice of who was the farmer and who was the VC. They have the choice of who is the bad Shiite or the bad Sunni. You don't know. You just don't know. Let's look at the history of the world and let's talk about religious crusades. That was one of them. Had three. How about the Spanish Inquisition? How about burning women at the stake for witchcraft in New England? If we would have been out of there in a couple, 2 or 3 years, would have been fine. But we set a train on a track now that no matter what we do as a country, there will be a lot more bloodshed. That we have ensured. Again, we have these people in a no-win situation, and it's our people. I think that if we wanted to do this correct, we would have to have been as brutal or more so than the leader that we disposed of. We won't do that. I still think, when people were up here talking, one of the devastating things I felt when I was in Vietnam was people protesting because I thought it was protesting against me. When I came home, we weren't very well received by certain people. I'm going to support this to send it on to the House floor because I think it needs to be supported on the House floor and it needs to be there for a vote. But I do say, let's make doggone sure that we do not demoralize our troops, that we support those troops. And for God's sakes, people, welcome them home when they do come home.
If your comments.
Welcome home.
Thank you for your comments. Further discussion from committee members? Representative Vice Chair Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This has been some of the most difficult testimony that I've sat through in a lifetime of sort of involvement with the public. The pain that this war has caused, no matter where you are on this memorial, is clearly evident, and the testimony here was moving, heartfelt, and important. But we're down to a vote not on the words that were all spoken here, but on the words before us in this memorial. And so I've read it, actually, and I really appreciate our administrator who has hand-engrossed it so I can read it the way it is, you know. The memorial itself starts with a lot of whereases, and there's sort of statements of fact, if you want to take it as such, that whereas our nation's involvement in Iraq has caused more than 3,100 U.S. service members, of whom 79 are Oregonians, and has inflicted combat wounds, injuries, psychic trauma, and other disabilities on more than 52,000 others. I will accept that fact. Whereas Congress has appropriated more than $500 billion to date to fund military operations. I will accept that fact. And under our Republican form of government, Oregon shares responsibility for $12 billion in joint programs with federal government at a time when the administration is cutting the federal commitment to education and transportation. I'll accept that fact. And whereas the National Guard has deployed more than 5,300 service members with more than 900 citizen soldiers seeking mental health care in local communities during a time of shrinking federal service, I'll accept that fact. In fact, There's no way that I know each of these facts is individually true, but I will accept them in this memorial. So then you get to the resolved statement, because if you accept these facts, then do you resolve what follows thereafter? I have no personal knowledge, expertise, really understanding of military matters, how to wage a war, what's the right way, what's the wrong way. I personally have not served. I had a brother served in Vietnam, family members in the Second World War. But for myself, to say to the government, here's how you should wage war, is a presumption that I struggle with. So I look at the words here and what they really say. And what they say is that we, the 74th Legislative Assembly, on behalf of the citizens of Oregon, urge the President to refrain from escalating United States involvement in Iraq, and if I can go further, until such time as the President obtains congressional approval for the escalation. I can buy that. Because what it really says is, we are in a terrible mess, and we need more help, not less. We need more people talking, not fewer. And that we are resolved to call on Congress and the President to announce an expedient plan for the redeployment of the armed forces of the United States from Iraq. And I sure buy that. So while I cannot presume to set strategy, I'm very uncomfortable telling our military how to wage war. I do think Congress needs to be asked more, and I think we need to be asked for more, and it's time to get out of Iraq. So on that basis, I will support this resolution.
Further discussion? Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, will support this memorial. I want to comment on my colleague from Medford that I joined with him in the determination that the troops that come back from Iraq and Afghanistan must have a warm welcome and every bit of care they possibly need in the coming decades. I opposed this war since before it began, and I do take into account what my fellow vice chair is saying in terms of a citizen's ability to tell the military what to do. But in our country, it is the politicians that do direct the military. And our politicians, in my view, have lied to us. They've taken us into a war that is extremely destructive to the country of Iraq and to the United States of America. It's blemished our reputation around the world. We have spoken out continuously. We have not been listened to. In last November's election, we spoke out very clearly. We wanted to change the direction. We have not been listened to. The only thing we can do is continue to speak out and demand that attention be paid. I'm not comfortable with all the wording of the amendments. I would prefer stronger language. because, again, I think this war is an absolute travesty for our country. But I'm willing to accept this language so we can have the broadest possible support to have the loudest voice possible. And perhaps, finally, we will be listened to change course in Iraq. Our country is better than this, and it's time for us to act to our ideals, to our principles. I'm very pleased that the Iraq Study Group has mentioned this resolution. That's a bipartisan effort to try to find a way out and to limit the damage that we've caused in Iraq, and I will strongly support this memorial. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually not normally a fan of memorials in the legislature. I think we do too many of them, and dozens of them are introduced. But I think there are two reasons why this one is a very legitimate one. One is that there's just a clear impact of this, of all these activities, of all these operations, of all this warmongering in Iraq on our state budget and our state services. The fact that there are so many folks who are coming back, who are being taken away, are having a huge negative impact on our state budget and our state services, which I think, unlike a lot of other foreign policy issues, therefore makes it very legitimate for us to take a stand on this. And the other factor is it really is limiting our ability to have the services of our own National Guard. The National Guard, except when they are federally deployed, is a state body, which is critical for our ability to fight fires and to deal with natural disasters here in Oregon. The fact that this war continues to go on and that Oregon National Guard troops continue to be pulled out for multiple deployments back-to-back severely hampers our ability to implement what we need to do in terms of the implementation of legitimate state role for our National Guard. And for those two reasons, this will be one of the few memorials that I will enthusiastically support.
Thank you, members, for your comments. And I would just like to thank everyone who has come forward and testified. I think that the testimony has been very compelling and very moving, and particularly the testimony that we have heard from the families of those that are serving, in some cases those who have lost their lives or been severely injured, and the veterans themselves. I think it's extremely important that we speak out. I think that there will never be a perfect version of this, but that it is important that we have bipartisan support, which we clearly do, and that's what I think is represented here. I also wanted to mention that a few months ago I was talking to a woman that I know whose son was serving in the Marines, and who told me that she mainly hears from him by email, but she also watches the television news, and every time she hears about another death in Iraq, her heart basically stops until she hears from her son. And then she rushes to her husband, and they hug each other, and then she realizes that that was some other mother's son, some other family, who just lost somebody, and she feels just overwhelming grief along with the relief she has felt. So I think this is a very small thing we can do today, but it's an important thing, and that is why I will be supporting it as well. So at this point, with no further comments, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Rowland?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. This House Joint Memorial 9 will go to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Shields and Holvey will carry the memorial. With nothing further to come before us, we are adjourned.